AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Dow Automotive Systems, improving durability and increasing design flexibility with Betamate structural adhesives at DowBetamate.com.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 37 for Tuesday, January 5th, 2010. NIAS, my ass! Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for AutoLine After Hours at the iTunes Store. Well, here we are, AutoLine After Hours. We're doing this on a Tuesday evening instead of our normal Thursday evening, and I got to explain to the audience what's going on here. On Thursday, General Motors is having a big announcement. They won't tell us what that announcement's going to be, but it is going to be at their Brownstown Township plant, the battery plant that they built here in Michigan. They've asked us, AutoLine, to go do a live webcast at that event. So that's Thursday morning. For us to be able to set up everything there, then break it down, haul it all back here, get everything set up for the studio, we just thought, you know, why don't we do something different here that doesn't knock our brains out? So here we are, going live with AutoLine After Hours. And joining me, as always, my friend, my colleague, the extremist, the auto extremist, Peter DeLorenzo. Peter, great having you here in 2010.
John, happy New Year. It's great to be back.
So tell us, what'd you rant about on your website today?
It's just kind of a pre-Detroit Auto Show setup, and talked about Nancy Pelosi visiting the show and the whole green aspect of the show and a few other things. So.
Well, good. I hadn't had a chance to get to your website today.
That's all right.
A little bit early, but I want to catch up with that because I'd love to hear what you have to say, especially about Nancy Pelosi coming in there.
Well, I joke that she might be riding her bike around the displays, being the green aspect.
Keep her carbon footprint
small. I didn't say broom. I said bike.
And also joining us here is Steve Finley from Ward's Dealer Business. And Steve, great having you here with us, too.
Great to be here.
And one of the reasons specifically that we wanted to have you here on the show today is because of our guest, Doug Fox, who is the chairman of the North American International Auto Show, though we're lobbying him now to try and get it back to being called the Detroit Auto Show. But Doug, great having you here with AutoLine After Hours.
Great to be here, John. Thank you.
And tell us more. You're not just the chairman of the auto show. You've got car dealerships, too.
Absolutely. Five stores in the Ann Arbor market. We have a Nissan store, an Acura store, Hyundai, Kia, and Mitsubishi.
And he's smiling.
Yes.
Hyundai, Kia.
Hyundai, Kia. Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yep. One of the top three sales numbers for last month, which we're pleased about.
Wait, now explain that. Go into a little bit more detail. What are you saying here, the top three sales?
Well, I'm talking about Toyota, Ford, and the Hyundai Group. We're in the top three based on today's numbers.
Astonishing statistics.
Who would have ever thought a year or two ago?
How long have you been a Kia Hyundai dealer?
Well, I've been a Hyundai dealer for, 20 years. And a Kia dealer for only about 5 years.
Did you think 20 years ago that Hyundai would be in this position?
You know, at the risk of appearing kind of glib, yes, I really did. I believed in the product. I really felt that they would be a real comer.
Because they almost went out of North America, didn't they?
Well, I don't know if they came that close, but there were certainly some challenges. My gosh, when you look at what's happened in the last 7 or 8 years, it's just incredible. And the quality is unbelievable.
Maybe there's an object lesson there for other automakers that have been on the ropes lately.
What do you think, Doug, from having been a Hyundai dealer for 20 years now, and the last 10 years especially, they've come on like gangbusters. In fact, there's a cover story on in the current Fortune magazine, right? Something about
Alex Taylor.
Taylor wrote it? Yeah. Okay. So as a car dealer, what's been the change? What do you think has made Hyundai as strong as it is right now?
Well, a number of things. They've been very innovative in their marketing. Just recently, the Hyundai Assurance program.
Where if you lost your job, they take over payments.
Exactly. If you lose your job, they would take over your payments. And very few claims were made on that. But, some other manufacturers, I think, jumped on that a few months later. It was a way, again, just another way to express themselves in the marketplace as being an innovator. Obviously, America's Best Warranty. Gosh, was that 10 years ago? It's hard to remember. 8 years ago?
So that was at the point where they had the decision.
Exactly right. That was the watershed moment,
And
that was the turning point. But that was probably when we really started to see what I would consider mainstream customers.
Mm-hmm.
We started to see teachers and nurses, and I don't mean to sound sexist. I mean, we saw a lot of male customers as well, but just folks that wanted a great value automobile at a great price with a lot of protection with that warranty. And so it was a wonderful change for us. And
as a dealer, anything the way the factory has changed with how it deals with dealers, or has it been pretty much the same?
No, I would say that's been very consistent. Hyundai listens, corporate listens to the dealers. We've had great management. Obviously, we've had some management turnover through the years.
You got a pretty good guy, a CEO in America
Kraftchuk
right now.
John Kraftchuk is just an incredible guy, brilliant, brilliant guy. And he's one of us, you know. He's kind of low-keyed, and he just gets the job done.
Right.
Did you find that the Buy the Car Back program, did that really entice people to buy cars, or was that just something that got Hyundai in the news? Because I talked to some dealers that said, if somebody thinks they're going to lose their job, they're not in the mood to buy a car, whether the manufacturer will take the car back after so long.
I would agree with you. I can only speak for my market in Ann Arbor, and I can tell you, honestly, that would have been the case. Very few people ever came in and said, hey, I want to know about that program you have. In fact, it was something that we would usually explain to them either during the sales process or in some cases at delivery, because you had to sign a form for their legal requirements, say, by the way, you know, you have this coverage. I do? We got a lot of that. So I think
so you made the sale without it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, but there was a lot of coverage in the media about it, a lot of national coverage, and I think that helped.
Sure.
Overall, just
it's free advertising in that case.
And I read where you're going to have a partition in your showrooms now for the Genesis and the
showroom within a showroom
and the Equus.
Yeah.
Rather than a new dealer network.
Yeah, I think that was obviously the major concern that the dealers had. There was always talk of a second channel.
Well, I suggested that they call up some of the Display Saturn dealers. Talk about an instant.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Really appreciate that.
Well, when you say the
it
second,
didn't go far.
Yeah.
When you say the second channel, you meant the
second channel.
A luxury,
Lexus
yeah. Toyota Infinity. Type situation.
Yeah, absolutely
okay. They
right.
They chose
yeah.
to keep it in-house, but I'm sure you have some parameters to separate the products now. And
yeah, but I think that was definitely being considered, you know, certainly up until a very short time ago.
Was that wise that they came up with the ultimate conclusion of keeping it all together?
Oh, I think they had to. With the cost of operating a facility, if you haven't seen enough of that already, with the demise of so many facilities that can't support it with throughput. I mean, today to ask someone to do a standalone facility, and, well, but, geez, the first question, how many units can I do? What kind of volume? Well, you know, we're not sure.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, it's just, I don't think that was a non-starter.
So what's involved? Is it elaborate or what you have to do to the
haven't
show?
Seen the details on it. You really know more about it than I do as a dealer.
Hmm. Hey, let's talk about the Detroit Auto Show, since it is truly just around the corner. What's new and different this year?
Oh, my gosh. From last year, of course, at this time, the sky was falling in on all of us. You know, we had bridge loans that weren't yet finalized. Two of our major manufacturers were in play, per se. The Chrysler exhibit last year at this time had barely even started to be constructed. We were really concerned. We had Nissan pull out on Thanksgiving weekend.
GM had AstroTurf, and that's about it.
We had 60,000 square feet dumped in our lap from Nissan, right in the middle of the hall. So we had to get pretty creative. So what's different this year? I was just down there a few hours ago. GM display is incredible. back to a raised floor, to your point.
Good.
Let me tell you, the Chrysler display, Sergio may say he doesn't like auto shows, but he's made a heck of a statement with this. When you see the fixtures, I don't know if you've been on the floor.
No, haven't been. I haven't been down there yet.
Oh, come on down. We'll get you a credential.
I got a credential. I'll be there. I'll live in Cobo Hall next week.
Yeah. Well, they got Mercedes, Ferrari, Maserati and Ferrari.
Ferraris. That's out of the, that was a big rumor, and that's now official. We'll have an electric Fiat concept. We'll have that Lancia with the Chrysler grille hatchback. But I think the big change is just when you see that Chrysler display. I mean, how many years did we see that waterfall in the bricks? Remember
a lot
that
of years.
For the Jeep?
Yeah, a lot of years.
Right. They got their money's worth out of that one. But this
is that in somebody's backyard now?
Who knows?
The big Ram's gone. The big Ram's head's gone.
Very contemporary. I would call it kind of Euro chic.
Listen to you. You're talking about the whole show, or could be talking, and you're talking about the Chrysler exhibit.
Talking
this thing
Chrysler.
Must be really quite something to see that.
Don't you think it would have been wouldn't it have been wise of Chrysler to follow it up with a press conference of some sort? I mean, they're getting all this publicity for what they're not doing, having a press conference.
They don't have much to say.
Well,
so I
got to
give them
I've
that.
Been to a lot of press conferences where they didn't have a lot to say, but the point is you're having a press conference.
Them, right?
I'll give Sergio this one. I mean, they're not having one because they don't have much to say.
You know, I'm not sure I totally agree because, you know, we went to that big press conference they had a couple of months ago, which I called the Bataan Death March that went on. I was there for 8 hours.
Yeah.
And, I mean, okay, those of us in the room heard everything, and we all reported on it, but there's still a lot. A lot of media, a lot of people who don't know a lot of the details of what their plans are.
You know, we don't have that kind of time on Media Day.
No, I know we don't. But I mean, this is where you pick out a few juicy tidbits,
right.
Like you're saying, this Lancia that they're bringing over, putting the Chrysler grill on. I'd be talking about that. I'd be explaining again why we pulled Ram aside as a separate brand. And I think they're missing a big opportunity not holding a press conference.
Well, I keep holding my breath. You know, we could probably fit them in somewhere that they'll make a last minute. And I had a journalist actually make that comment to me in an interview earlier today that, you know, maybe they'll still be a surprise. And there might be something.
Well,
they better let us know or we'll be at somebody else's press conference.
The big barrier to that is the phrase 20 minutes, Sergio.
Yeah.
20 minutes.
You don't let Sergio get up there. You let the brand guys, the brand CEOs go do their thing.
Okay.
Hey, again, you know, you were talking about Chrysler and General Motors being in a meltdown a year ago, Nissan pulling out at the last second. The other thing was the stupid city council at the time. I watched, it was you and who else? Rod Alberts went to testify testify.
Testify
is the right word. And I could not believe how hostile the then city council was to you guys and the audience.
Did you hear the heckling?
Go home. Go home.
You heard that. Yeah, you could hear
it.
Sure
I did.
Yeah. Yeah, they were heckling us in the audience. Obviously, we ignored it and sat down and made our statements as to the importance of the auto show and the economic benefit that it brings to our region every single year. It isn't like a Super Bowl or something that might be here every 10 years. It's here every year with the same type of numbers economically. It was a shocker. But I'll tell you, that council has turned around.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness.
Look,
a new mayor.
It didn't get any worse. I mean, it was just, well, had to go.
I know, but we've gone from, I think, one end of the pendulum to the other.
I heard Kwame Kenyatta's statement. Did you hear it the other day? It was he said, I don't know what I'm going to do with all this working together and we're all getting along. He said, I'm going to have to start a fight.
It's amazing how some jail sentences can turn things around.
Get your attention.
Well, yeah. Monica Conyers, who, you know, was leading the charge fighting you guys. I mean, here you want to come and invest in the city, bring all these people into the city, say good things about Detroit, and they're fighting you tooth and nail. I could not understand that. I am so glad that she's gone. I'm so glad that we've got a new mayor and that we've got a new city council there. But tell us a little bit about, you know, the Cobo expansion plans and how things are going to be different now that you've got the authority running Cobo.
Well, and that's one of the major differences that you just nailed. We now have Kobo Convention Center in the hands and control of an authority, which...
Not the city.
Not the city, which
and,
is...
And I got to emphasize for anybody who didn't know this before, the prior manager of Kobo Hall, the guy who was running it before, is in jail now for bribes and kickbacks. His predecessor is in jail now for bribes and kickbacks, and that's why they had to yank it away from the city and put an authority in control of this.
And we have representatives from all the counties and from the state and, of course, from the city as well. And so you have an independently run convention center. So the parking is controlled that way, all the contracts, and this is the biggie. And the existing contracts that were in place are going to be allowed to run out. That's the only really the way they
legal
could do
way
it.
You can do
right.
It. Right.
But once those contracts run out, then it's a whole new ball game, and the monkey business is behind us.
I mean, I've been told that on a per square foot basis, the Detroit show is the most expensive auto show to exhibit at for any automaker.
Well, I don't know that that's true. You have some other expenses.
Well, the dollar's gone down, but that's probably the only reason why. I heard horror stories, and it sounds like this is finally going to get fixed.
Yeah, there were terrible stories about catering and, things like that. But those things will change now and are changing. The authority has already made some significant improvements. We've had electrical upgrades that have been completed. The roof won't
leak. Leaky roof is
well,
not
luckily,
leaking.
we had extreme cold, so it was all frozen. But when Autorama came in, a week... You were there, probably.
Well, no, I mean...
You and those exhibitors were really hostile.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they've got
dripping on their
$300,000 custom cars sitting there with water dripping down and not clean water.
Not clean water. It looked nasty.
Well, for the Detroit Auto Show, they had the icicles. They added a nice touch. But do you think when all that stuff is resolved that companies like Nissan will return to the floor? Because right now they're in town, or they will be in town at... They're going to be at Comerica Park with a party and a display of vehicles.
Well,
is it cost prohibitive? They are on the floor of the show.
And they're in the Electric Avenue display showing the Leaf.
Okay, but that's all they're showing, isn't it?
That's all they're showing this year.
Explain Electric Avenue, because I'm sure a lot of people watching haven't heard what that's about.
Electric, great name.
And we have the rights to the song for the duration of the show from Eddie Grant. But you guys are too young to remember.
No, I remember that. We're not that young, unfortunately.
So we'll be playing that music. You'll hear it. But it's a 37,000-square-foot display on the main floor, all electric vehicles from all over the world. And the Leaf will be a major display there. Nissan constructed their own exhibit. We're very, very excited, obviously, to have Nissan back with the Leaf. I believe it's the first time the Leaf has been shown at an auto show.
At an auto show, that's
North,
right.
In North America. They did have it in Los Angeles, but I think it was outside off-site.
Yeah. I'm not even sure it was off-site.
Really?
No, I take that back. They did have some event, some press event.
Yeah,
with
they started their road show with the Leaf in California. I know that, so I've assumed that it was there during those dates. But we have the first one under roof at an auto show, so we're kind of proud of that. And we hope, to your point, that that's the start of maybe getting our foot back in the door and having them come back with a full model line display.
And what about Kobo? It's supposed to be expanded and upgraded.
Yeah,
When's all that start?
Well, I think the authority has some pretty neat ideas on that. They're going to put an RFP out, a request for proposal, this spring. And I'm hearing from some sources that they may try some really cool, creative ideas on design by asking local schools and area like CCS, where we have some really
College for Creative studies, one of the greatest design school, automotive design schools
in the world,
on that too.
With designers for automotive manufacturers all over the world, come up with maybe some ideas of a new exterior facade. And then maybe be able to let those bids out late summer. And then, of course, the big change will be Kobo Arena. They will have control of Kobo Arena, and that's another 70,000 square feet of exhibit space that will be connected at the Michigan Hall level. That's the lower grade level. Kind of blow out the concourse in that area, put in, I've seen the renderings, it's incredible, like an eight-bay escalator that you can adjust, move six of them up and two down, whatever the traffic flow dictates, and you'll be able to look down, kind of like, I would call it Geneva-esque, where you have that upper level, and you can look down on the original Hall before they expanded it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a similar look to that, where you'll be able to look down into Michigan Hall and what is now Cobo Arena. So we'll have another 200,000 square feet at that level. And then there's also some talk, I think, of opening up. I mean, we have that beautiful view of the river,
mm-hmm. right.
and that beautiful landscape. Why not incorporate that somehow on the southern
idea.
Exposure? So I think they're going to maybe let some incredibly creative people, local people, take a whack at it.
That's great. But that's going to take some time to do. I mean, I got to believe it's going to take a couple of years to get this all.
2012, I think, would be the...
So what about next year's show? I mean, are we going to be picking our way through...
No, we're not. We've asked for no disruption, obviously. We've really tried to make that very clear, and I think that'll be respected.
Mm-hmm.
So working around our dates will be as a kind of the primary tenant, I think, is already built into the equation. So next year... I don't know that you'll see a big difference next year. Maybe see some plans. You might even have a model or something mm-hmm. that's out in the concourse. But then I would say look out in 2012. You might really. And
well, it's going to be
Peter's
bigger,
point,
obviously.
Maybe that's when we consider.
So we should talk about that now.
Well, I would just say real quickly, you know, the concourse kind of looks like it could use some help. And obviously you want more room. But once you get into the show itself, it's a nice-looking show. You know, a lot of people rag on Cobo and the state it's in, but the exhibit floor is pretty classy.
Top-notch.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like it in North America.
I would almost argue in the world, because I would say the only show right now that I think gives Detroit a run for its money is the Frankfurt show.
That's the one that I have.
Everyone's saying, you know, the hell with Tokyo. You know, we can't sell cars there unless we're a Japanese automaker. I mean, everybody just about dropped out of it.
Right.
Shanghai's coming up, but it's not there yet. Paris is nice, but it's and Geneva's good, but again, they don't match what Frankfurt is. But I got to tell you, as a journalist, you know, the Frankfurt show, which is awesome, is what, about 8 or 10 Cobo halls, all different separate buildings?
Oh, it's almost a little too awesome.
It is too big. You can't really cover the show. You're running from this press conference over to that press conference, going from
building to that building,
and it's like you miss so much.
Yeah, you really
and,
do.
And, you know, most of us who go over to cover the show, we're there for a couple of days, so it's not like it can take a few more days and then go see everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I like about the Detroit show is... you can see everything. I mean, it takes you a few days to go through it all, but you can pretty much cover it all.
And you can navigate.
Yeah.
You can immediately navigate. You know where you're headed and where you want to go.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly right. So I agree with you. But, I mean, Frankfurt is incredible. You have a pavilion that's dedicated to a manufacturer.
I know. Mercedes has its own building.
A couple of them, aren't
BMW.
There?
And BMW,
Volkswagen,
too.
Volkswagen, Audi. So it's incredibly massive. But, yeah, I would agree with you. The displays in Frankfurt are at a similar level. But you have to remember, one of the nice features we've had with Cobo is we have 8 to 12 weeks to set up. You know, when you go to the Javits Center or you go to McCormick Place, I mean, they have events scheduled back-to-back. And, you know, as things start to come back, that luxury could go away.
Let's hope it does.
Yeah.
From that standpoint, we need Detroit to get more events.
Right.
We need Cobo to get more events. And
I got sort of a culture shock when I first went to the Frankfurt show. One thing was when I exited the plane in the terminal and there's a no smoking sign and everybody's smoking around an ashtray, too. And then the show itself, was so used to, you know, the Detroit show and other North American shows where the big three, you know, have this prominence, you know, especially mm-hmm. General Motors and its, you know, multi-level displays. And they're in this back building. You have to, you know, it's like walk a half a mile to get this corner that GM has its display. And I thought that was an interesting perspective to, you know, kind of see how the other half lives.
Yeah.
What were you saying we should talk about, Peter?
About the name of the actual
show. Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, well, pick that up. You're saying...
What was it, 22 years ago?
21.
21 years ago, the Detroit Auto Show, for our viewers out there, was strictly a regional show, sort of a Homer show for the Detroit manufacturers. And some visionary people got together and said, you know, we're the motor capital of the world. This show is not up to that standard. We want international sanction, recognition. And they set about and you can fill in the rest of the story. They set about to elevate the show.
Yeah, we had four pivotal dealers. We had Bob Thibodeau, Gordon Stewart, David Fisher, and the last name escapes me, but I'll come up with it. And then, of course, Keith Crane was very much involved in that.
Probably Hoot or not?
Wasn't Hoot.
Okay.
No, I'll come up with it in just a second. And they traveled the world. They visited Frankfurt. They went to Tokyo. They went to Paris, Geneva. And they said, we can do this. But in order to do this, and I think this was Keith's vision, we have to kill the Detroit Auto Show. It has to die. And once we do that, then we'll make an announcement 72 hours later or whatever that now we'll have. But we'll get everybody's attention for 2 or 3 days when we kill the Detroit Auto Show. And I can't say that I remember what happened in 88 when they did that, but I'm sure there was a lot of buzz when they said it's a dead show, it's over with. And then they came back a few days later and said, here's what we'll replace it with. And it had the name changed to the North American International Auto Show, and we received OICA sanctioning, which is the Organization of Constructeurs Automobiles. It's French.
Hmm. It sounds almost like religious. I don't.
Peter, you're saying time to kill the North American International Auto Show name.
The name, yeah, because, you know, here we are. It will remain one of the pivotal shows. Every other major auto show in the world, it's the city. It's the Shanghai show, the Paris show, Frankfurt show, Geneva. You know, I think it's recognized the Detroit show will remain a pivotal show. And because as much as everyone's writing off the domestic automobile industry, the fact of the matter is the technical aspect of this region is actually growing in importance and in significance to the global automakers. So I think it's time now to come back full circle and call it the Detroit Motor Show, the Detroit Auto Show, which is what most people refer to it anyway.
Yeah.
As John and I were talking before the show, it's five words now.
Right. Instead of Detroit Show, it's North American International Auto Show.
Five long words, too, except for show.
So who knows? Maybe when Kobo gets reimagined and maybe it'd be time to change the name back.
Yeah, what do you think of the Motor City Auto Show? If you don't want to go with Detroit, if that's...
No, I think Detroit's a key element of it. If Detroit's going to come back, and we certainly hope it does, the timing might be right.
Well, a lot of things seem to be coming together. The synergies seem to be there. Politically, we have an entirely new...
Leadership.
And what
new mayor, essentially new city council.
Absolutely.
And I like what I see in both cases.
And the Lions are going to be in the Super Bowl in 2012. But, you know, you got to believe. Yeah.
Now, that's the team that should be renamed.
The North American football team, right.
Well, I think we'll get a few first draft picks, won't we, again this year?
Yeah, we'll get I think number two.
We are number two, right. Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, it's more wide receivers.
Yeah.
Hope. What's the terminology or the saying? Hope. Hope something eternal.
Spring's
eternal. There. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, we ought to go for a short break right now. We've got to thank our sponsor of the show, Dow Automotive Systems, and one of the things that I wanted to bring up, you know, you can go to DowBetaMate.com to look at the stuff. But one of the things that I find that is interesting that Dow does is this structural foam that you use in cars. They call it Impax. That's their trade name for the thing. But it's like cars that especially have not been good at or have areas that maybe aren't as good from an impact state standpoint that they can use this foam in. I know an example a few years ago is one of the car companies was not able to get a 5-star crash rating on its cars, didn't want to go in, redesign the whole thing. I mean, it was at the end of design, right? They're doing crash. This is before simulation just a few years ago. And so they didn't know what to do. Dow said, hey, we've got just the solution. And they shot this foam, this Impax foam, into the front rails on the cars, what the body designers refer to as the shotguns, because they look like two tubes shooting out. in the front and shot this thing full of foam, and voila, five stars instantly. So kind of interesting how you can use technology as simple as foam to dramatically improve the safety of a car. And Peter, I know you'd be familiar, you know, Dow using foam in the NASCAR car of tomorrow in the doors, too.
Right, right.
And it's been amazing to see those cars literally bounce off walls and keep on going, whereas in the past you would have had a wreck and that would have been your race.
Yeah, yeah. Well, technology's come a long way, especially in racing. Not all of it good, but...
Well, I should mention also that we talked about our Electric Avenue display. Mm-hmm. Dow is sponsoring that display for us.
That's right. Dow Kokam,
yes.
Another one of the Dow divisions there.
And they are a new sponsor for us, which we're so thrilled to have as a major sponsor of that 37,000 square feet. And they will also be showing some electric vehicle technology there.
Cool. Perfect. Ties in beautifully. So, again, you know, you can check that all out at DowBetaMate.com. They've got the stuff on impacts and a whole bunch of other info. So any of you car designers looking at the show right now, if you're short of hitting a five-star rating, you ought to check out this impact stuff. But let's get to some of the news, too, that's been going on. We got December sales in. I was at the Ward's site today, Steve, and saw that we hit over 1 million units for a month, finally. We did that in the Cash for Clunkers month, but... this is the first sort of hitting 1 million units on our own, which, you know, 2 years ago we would have said, oh, my God, how bad can that get? But, right. You know, now we're hitting 1 million units. I think we finished the month at a seasonally adjusted rate of 11.2 million units, which is pretty good. I think it bodes well for the
things being relative,
year.
That's pretty good. It was a great month, a bad year. I thought the headline was Chrysler dropped for, you know, the full year sales below 1 million. For the first time in a long time.
That's significant.
Scary. Yeah, that's scary.
And not to mention the fact that for the December month, they dumped a lot into the fleets, and, you know, they're struggling. I mean, if Chrysler's going to survive, and I've been writing this long term, it's the next 24 months. That's key for them.
What do they have to do other than push some new product out there, which they don't have?
Yeah, right? I mean,
that's
the dealers
situation.
They're all in the same boat. The dealers are just hanging on.
One thing I saw looking into the sales is it all came out in trucks. Their car sales were actually up and up strong. Now maybe that's half fleet and all.
Yeah, I'm sure that's.
But Jeep took it on the chin. Mm-hmm. Just took it on the chin. And the truck products, except for the Caravan and the Journey, they did
Journey
pretty
did
well.
Well.
Town and Country was down, not very significantly, but it was Jeep and trucks that really took it on the chin.
I think what I think about when I hear your comments about, you know, what can they do as a dealer and a non-Chrysler dealer, just to be frank, I don't think this is an option, but you just don't want to see them go in and start buying the business again.
Yeah, well, they can.
And I just don't think that can happen, yeah.
That's a strategy that will not work. And I think Sergio's getting a big dose of reality here. That's probably why he doesn't want to say anything.
Yeah.
He said, I don't like this so much.
Well, you know, it's so bad in some situations. And, you know, I don't want to sound like I don't have any faith in the future of Chrysler, because I do. But when you have dealers that lost their franchises and that the dealer roundup of 2009 saying, I don't want my franchise back. I just want to be compensated correctly for it.
Right.
You know, they're not interested in selling Chryslers anymore, but they want some compensation for what they invested in the company and in their facility to represent the company. So that's kind of indicative when they're not saying, I want my Chrysler franchise back so I can keep selling Chryslers. They just want to cash out.
Right.
Doug, they got screwed, didn't they? I mean,
they sure did.
They didn't get compensated. Here was pressure in Washington to tell Chrysler to cut all the stuff, and these guys got left holding the bag.
Yeah, you know, we talked a year ago on your show about dealer consolidation and how it had to happen, and it was a necessary evil, but this isn't the way you want to see it happen.
GM did a better job of it, didn't they?
Oh, without question, without question. I mean, you know, now we have this legislation that's passed Congress to arbitrate and consider reinstatement. I mean, how, with this quagmire, could you possibly rewind this thing? Okay. I mean, most of these Chrysler stores have shut down.
Yeah, they're empty.
The franchises have been given to their competitors down the street. Their customer lists have been dispersed to other the continuing dealers. It's just a mess. I mean, I loved Ed Lapham's comment when he said, how do you unscramble eggs? You know, it's impossible. Yeah. It's absolutely impossible. And it's a mess. But you're right. They took something from them, which is un-American.
I think it's illegal. It should be illegal. You know, my whole take on it was this. Look, you're printing a bunch of stock and you're giving it to the government. You're printing a bunch of stock and you're giving it to the union. Print some more stock and give it to the dealers and the bondholders, because they're the other guys who got screwed in this process, too.
That's one great solution.
And I thought, you know, you're just printing paper, right? You're printing shares that are virtually, you know, worthless today. You do an IPO down the road, somebody might be able to make.
Right.
To me, that would at least have been somewhat more on. I don't see how you can go and literally, essentially, confiscate somebody's property and not compensate them for that. To me, it's criminal what happened to those dealers.
And there are so many cases where you talk to dealers, and I've talked to so many that just feel the way you do, or you mentioned feel screwed, that they were told, this is the one of the worst cases, where they're told, invest in
the
facilities, build, you know, the alpha plant.
Right?
Yeah, and they sink millions of dollars of their money. It's their money, not corporate money.
Yep.
And then they turn around, they take the franchise
right.
away.
And the guy's stuck with a building. I mean, they're all over the country like that.
Right.
But it's, I'll tell you, the next thing with this arbitration will be they're going to be forced now to show their parameters for termination and to show good cause. And that's where it's really going to get interesting, because you know and I know some dealers that were profitable. They had great CSI. They had tremendous UIO, units in operation, and good sales coverage. They were covering their markets. From a sales measurement standpoint, all the three components that a manufacturer measures you by, and they were terminated. Now,
yeah, how do you defend that in court? Plus, I've heard some dealers tell me that certain dealers got the call before everything went down and were warned, get this and this and that and the other thing in, yeah, get this in order and you'll be okay. And others did not get that call.
Yeah, there were some winks and nods. We've all heard that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I talked to a dealer outside of St. Louis, and he had, like you say, the great CSI scores, great sales numbers, and he had the dealership taken away, the franchise taken away. And they had sued Chrysler a few years ago. It was a business dispute. They went to court. They couldn't settle, so they went to court. And he felt that was why they got whacked. And then he discovered upon researching a little, that there were about four or five dealers, Texas, Rhode Island, another state, I can't recall right away, but that were in a similar situation. They had sued the manufacturer, and they got their dealership taken away. And I talked to Chrysler about it, and they said, well, you know, that was going to be one of the reasons for termination as part of the matrix, but we decided not to use that. And these guys are saying, well, it sure as heck looked like they used it, because we had everything going for us except for that little black mark.
Yeah, I think you could take it even to a more subjective drill down and just say an outspoken dealer would speak out once in a while.
Yeah.
We all know some like that.
I think we all know some, more than a few like that. Mm-hmm. Why do you think GM was able to compensate its dealers and Chrysler not? Was Chrysler just that short of cash to be able to do it? Was it a management decision, or what do you think happened there?
Well, I think for one thing, the timeline was different. Chrysler was the first was the first run, and I think maybe just by seeing what happened. What was it, 4 weeks later, 5 weeks later?
GM had 2 months to go through bankruptcy. Chrysler had 1 month.
Yeah, so a month or so. Might have made a little difference just to see how the mistakes that were made. And, of course, the dollars and cents may have been there, too. I remember when we talked a year ago, I said, they've got to compensate them. And you threw up your hands and said, Doug, where's the money going to come from?
What?
They don't have the money. Those were your exact words.
No, I stand by that. But somehow GM came up with the money.
Right.
Well, they gave him a softer landing, but I still think in both Chrysler's case and GM's case, once you get past the injustice done to the dealers, it was self-destructive the way they did it. I mean, everybody agrees the dealership ranks should have been trimmed. Mm-hmm. You don't want dealers in the same market of the same brand cutting each other to death. Mm-hmm. But this idea that the customer is going to drive miles to the next closest GM dealership, drive by the Honda dealership or the VW dealership or the Toyota dealership to get to the other GM dealership, it's not going to happen. And, you know, Barbara Tuchman, who's a famous historian, wrote a book, March of Folly. And it was basically of countries doing things that they shouldn't have done. Like the Vietnam War was one example. The Revolutionary War was another example to the British. And her point was that everybody can commit an act, a mistake, unwittingly. But folly is defined when you know you are making a mistake, when you know you are acting against your self-interest, and you do it anyways. Mm-hmm. And I submit that GM and Chrysler, the way they did this dealership thing, was a total act of folly, by her definition.
Hmm. Well, there are plenty of angry GM dealers out there, too.
Who are, by the way, going to be selling other products. You know, they're not gone. They just don't have their franchise for GM anymore.
A friend of mine lost his deal. He's really furious about GM.
But when you think about sometimes when people get something taken away from them like that, they go back to the person. They make it a personal mission to outsell that person that did that to them or that company that did that to them. I mean, you know, these dealers have other brands in their portfolio.
Yeah, and you're dealing with emotion, mm-hmm. a lot of emotion.
Well, you know, it's about that time that we got to think about getting to the rapid fire part of the show. But just before we get to that, Doug, I just wonder, you mentioned that you are going or you've traveled around to the different global auto shows, mm-hmm. Shanghai, Tokyo, Frankfurt, Paris. What about India? The Delhi Delhi in India is now this week, and there's all kinds of stories coming out of that thing. You ever been over to that one?
No, that's not been on our radar. We've talked about it. And I think there's a big one that's developing in Abu Dhabi or Kuwait. Mm-hmm. And that's another one that might have to go on the radar in future years. But at this point, we've limited ourselves just to the OICA sanctioned shows around the world.
But what show really impressed you?
Oh, I would agree that Frankfurt this year was incredible. And Geneva, you know, which is upcoming now.
Geneva's always a good show.
It's always a good show. We look at Geneva kind of as our sister show because, again, it's all under one roof, mm-hmm. to your point, that you can navigate and you can see everything. And you
Instead of building after building after building.
Exactly right. And Geneva's always a good show, so that'll be interesting. But I think it's really going to be fun to see the press when we open those doors on January 11th, Monday morning, and they walk in there, to your point, and see what's been built in the last 12 weeks. It's a mind blower. It really is. I mean, we're back, and it's fun, and it's proof that good things are happening in Detroit. It's real proof that good things are happening. Everyone should be proud.
Cool. So Ben, we got it. Okay, our first one comes from our good friend Pedro Fernandez, who says, as car sales have gone down, and this is directed to you, uh-huh. are you noticing less public interest in car shows than years ago? And do you think car shows will diminish in popularity if sales continue to drop?
Well, that's a question a lot of people have asked, Pedro. And I would say that what we're seeing is a trend towards the regional shows struggling, because the money just isn't there to support those smaller shows. And what we're seeing, kind of a similar situation in the auto industry with consolidations and brands going away, the smaller, lower volume brands going away, and larger players emerging as the key go-to players. And I think we're going to see that with the global auto shows. You'll have the Frankfurts, the Paris, the Geneva, the Shanghai, Beijing, Detroit, NAIS, possibly Chicago, L.A., New York. I'd throw those in there as well. But then when you get to the Clevelands and the Kansas Cities and Tallahassee and Jacksonville, and those are the shows, I think, Pedro, that are going to have a tough time finding funding and dollars.
Okay, next one. This comes from Jason. And Jason, I know I butchered your name last time I said it, but Jadosh, I'm hoping, sort of close to. He says, Peter mentioned a few weeks back that back in the day he had a Corvair he slapped headers on. He says, curious why he picked a Vair instead of a conventional muscle car. What drew you to the Vair?
Boy, that opens a can of worms. But as many of the listeners know, watchers know, that I grew up immersed in a GM family, and we had Corvairs from the get-go. Matter of fact, Bill Mitchell did a custom Corvair for us.
No kidding.
And we had a turbo Corvair a few months before they came out. So I always liked Corvairs, and I happened to get a 69 red coupe, which I loved, and I put J.C. Whitney headers on it. Yeah. And my brother also, his first race car was a 65 Corvair that we prepared for SCCA racing, so I've always had a soft spot for
him. When did they stabilize the Corvair?
From the 65 on.
Okay.
And that second-generation design still, even today, looks good.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Very clean. Mm-hmm. Okay, Ben, we got a call from Paul Stewart. Let's bring that call in.
Hi, John. Paul Stewart from Oakland County, Michigan. Glad to see you guys back, and Happy New Year to everybody. Can you tell us, will the new Ford Focus that comes out very late in the fall, will it be a single turbo or a dual turbo? And will I be able to get a base Focus with a steering wheel for under $20,000? Just curious. Thanks so very much. And what do you think the price will max out with the top line version with the turbos? Thanks very much. You guys have a good day and Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy
bye-bye.
New Year, yeah.
Ford's going to unveil that at Cobo, the global intro of the Focus.
Right.
It won't be in market for another 14 months. But I do know that Ford's working on some very impressive direct-injected twin-turbo motors. So I expect that Focus to be...
Twin-turbo in the Focus?
I think so.
Wow. I've seen the car. It is sensational.
It's a fabulous car.
It's a fabulous look. I thought I liked the Fiesta. This next-generation Focus is better still.
Stunning.
And, Paul, I don't know if you're going to be able to get it for under 20 grand. That is a good question. I don't know where they're going to price that car. My guess is the base MSRP will be under 20. Maxed out, I got to believe it's going to be, depending if they do a sport model with twin turbo, then you're going to be talking 30.
Well, yeah, 26. But it's a beautiful car.
Yeah, really good.
They got a lot of stuff going. You know, it's funny, a few short years ago, I remember when Ford was in the barrel, one of the criticisms was, God, their lineup sucks. You know, they had such a shallow offering, and now everybody's talking about Ford's having such great product.
Yeah.
Okay, Espo wants to know, Doug, any chance of moving the show to October when the weather's better? And, you know, I'm kind of, you know, what do people say when they come to the Detroit Auto Show in January? They all say, damn, is it cold?
It's always the coldest week of the year. It never fails, I know, and we just hope we don't.
If you go from like May to September, the Detroit area can be a beautiful kind of place to come visit.
Sure.
So, yeah, why January?
Well, we're an internationally sanctioned show, and we have to fit in the calendar with obviously Paris and Frankfurt, which alternate every other year. They're the international fall show, and then you move into our show, which is the
first of the new year
show, then you go to Geneva. So
you know how hard it is to get people to just come to Detroit, and then you tell them you got to come in January.
I know, but they come, they still come.
They do anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, our friend Kurt McAllister from Toyota. All right, Kurt says 2009 is in the books, and we're all aware of the truly tragic things that happened. What were three good stories that came out of the industry? I'll say number one, Ford's obvious turnaround. That really hit home. Anybody else? What was good in 2009?
Well, sorry, Kurt, it wouldn't be Toyota floor mats, but
ooh, from a low blow there.
From a dealer perspective, cash for clunkers.
Cash for clunkers.
Made
I guess.
A heck of a month in August.
Peter, anything you can think of that?
No.
Okay, all you got are two good things, which I guess is all we can hope for.
Well, I think the good thing is that people are talking about last year. They're talking about this year. You know, kind of a boomerang. We talked about that. You said we got into it so quickly, we're going to get out of it
exactly
quickly.
Right.
When did we talk last year?
I think the velocity will be the same coming out as it was going in.
Ben, we got another phone call from Larry, is it?
Yeah, my name's Larry. I'm from Northwest Pennsylvania. I'd never heard anyone talk about these new electric cars, like the Volt. How are they going to perform in weather like we've had here the last 3 days, like 41 inches of snow? Do you get stuck with an electric car? Does the battery rocking it to get out of a snowdrift? Does that cut down on the mileage? Just a question like that. I never heard anyone comment on it. Thank you.
Sure thing, Larry.
It's a good question.
An EV should be as good as any other car in the snow. In fact, with the weight of the batteries, it might even be better in the snow. But the cold weather will definitely reduce the range of any electric car.
Yeah.
No question about it, especially some of the bitter cold some of the country has experienced. I don't know if he mentioned rocking the car. Sure, it's going to use up juice in the battery just like it burns up gasoline. I guess the solution is don't get stuck in a snowbank.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, just if I could interject, I think that you'll see the electric vehicles take off first in the more temperate areas of the country, the coastal areas where you don't get extreme hot or cold, because I think heat can be just as tough, can it, on a battery as well, extreme heat.
Yep.
So I think when you get into those temperate areas, kind of, you know, the Tennessees, North Carolinas, right up through California will be a perfect market for them. Doesn't get too hot, doesn't get too cold.
Depending where you're talking about. California's a big state.
Parts of it get hot.
But I know what you're talking about.
When they were selling the EV1, the original General Motors electric vehicle, it was in Arizona, California, I think Florida. They kept them to warm weather states for that very reason. Do you guys think that electric is the real deal? Are we going there?
I think it's going to be much longer, you know, coming to fruition than people think.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be much smaller part of the overall fleet than people think, especially people in California and Washington. And I think selectively electric vehicles are going to be part of our nation's fleet, but it's not going to be anywhere near what they're thinking it's going to be, not even close.
I totally agree with Peter. It's please, automakers, pursue the development, go for
yeah,
it.
Absolutely.
But don't buy the hype. Right. Okay, Asian Martin says, this is pretty good. I got to set the stage a little bit. There was a rally at GM headquarters today for Saab owners to try and save Saab. So Asian Martin wants to know, which Saab would you take to the rally outside the Renaissance Center? And who are you going to take with you to help you push the thing there? I would take a Saab Sonnet. That's what I would take. Anyone else? I guess not.
I just still am a little dumbfounded that Saab, you know, is on its deathbed.
It's hard to imagine.
Yeah.
I agree. Just hard to imagine.
Yeah, that was a solid, good brand.
It was a very nice regional brand from northeast part of the country up into this area. It was fine.
Okay, Michael Weber wants to know, will Peter be sitting himself down in the new BMW GT at the auto show next week?
Which BMW? Oh.
The Gran Turismo.
The ugly-ass BMW?
The multifunctional one.
Yes, I will sit in it, and I will. I saw John wrote about or talked about it today.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I just think it's a horrific design trend, and I just...
Well, I think several automakers have zoomed in on this hole in the market lineup.
Yeah, yeah.
So the BMW X6... I mean, you're doing the X6. What's this GT thing about? Acura's doing it with the ZDX. I'm sorry, I don't understand it. There's a reason there's a hole in the market there.
Yeah.
Okay, Porsche Girl wants to know, who's going to be downstairs at this year's auto show, or is the driving experience going to be back?
The driving experience from the Michigan Economic Development Corporation is back in a larger format. It's a quarter-mile track now.
And explain what the driving experience is.
Well, the driving experience, you'll have all zero-emissions vehicles. We'll have fuel cell cars there, plug-in electrics, hybrids from, oh, my gosh, Smart will have a car there, many General Motors, Ford, Chrysler products. We'll have the Mitsubishi iMEV there. So you'll be able to ride. The press gets to drive them. After we breathalyze you.
Oh, darn.
And the public gets to ride in them with trained product specialists. It's a quarter-mile track. We've got, oh, my gosh, three waterfalls, two fountains, 6,000 trees, bushes, and shrubs from Michigan. It's incredible. I was in there today. You can hear the waterfall as soon as you walk in. And if you were there last year, I know your next question is, what about the smell of the mulch?
Yes.
We have scent machines that are going to take away all the smell of the mulch.
Good. He says smell. I'll call it stink.
And
okay.
A few real Wolverines are going to be snuck in to surprise the people
up
as they're negotiating the truck.
Now we know where the Chrysler waterfall went.
Right? There you go. Yep.
Okay, Porsche Girl also wants to know, what about Porsche this year? Are they in or out of the show?
They're not in the show. As you know, I'm sure Porsche's in transition now with the acquisition from Volkswagen. We have a tremendous relationship with Volkswagen. And stay tuned next year, Porsche Girl.
Okay, I don't know how to pronounce this. It's either Menzi or Menz. Says, do you know when Chrysler plans on showing the next generation Charger /300 and Durango replacement?
I do know the Charger's been pushed back to the end of 2010. And, you know, it looks sensational, but I don't.
And the 300's out sometime this year, right?
Yeah, but, you know, now things are getting real vague with them.
Are they still sticking with the Hemi V8? Is that a mandatory for that vehicle?
Well, I would think so.
And I don't know, is there going to be a Durango replacement? I don't think so.
No.
The only other new product I know that Chrysler's bringing out this year is the new Grand Cherokee.
Right.
And to me, it looks really good. Yeah. To my eye, it certainly does.
Well, just real quickly, the reason I ask about that is when you look what Ford has done with the
EcoBoost
and the Taurus. You know, it's a V6 and it's a show.
Yeah.
And it gets up there.
Well, getting back, John, to the EcoBoost on these small Ford four-cylinder motors, I think people are going to be stunned.
Stunned. Yeah, I think from a price standpoint, I expect them to have one turbo, actually, in, like, certainly the Fiesta line. Maybe we'll see what they do with the Focus. But I think it's when you get in, you know, the V6s, like
maybe,
we've got
maybe
in the show.
Maybe the Focus RS will have.
Well, Focus RS. That we got to keep lobbying for it on that one.
Yeah.
Okay, John Wills. All right, John says, will I be blinded by the Audi display in all bright white again, or have they changed it?
You will still be blinded by the light. It's incredible.
The Audi display is something, though. Boy, they just do some great stuff.
Yeah. They do. I mean,
I'm wondering, to John's question, will they change the background music? I've been listening to that now for 5 years. Our office is back up to the Audi display.
Oh, yeah. You want to just go up to their hospitality suite, get a fork, and stab yourself.
Yeah.
What's the music?
I can't describe it.
Yeah, it's German.
You'll know it.
German techno funk.
Thank you.
Well, speaking of music, Muntzman wants to know, any other performances besides the Romantics? And the Romantics are going to be playing Friday night during the charity preview.
The Romantics will play during the charity preview, and I'm sure, as everyone knows, we've reduced that ticket price to $250. 35% reduction from $400 last year. We want to see everybody there because we got to make it up on volume to help these charities. We do have another surprise which involves music. It's never been done anywhere in Michigan before. It's only been done a few places in the world. And I guarantee you, if you're not there and when you read about it and hear about it on Saturday morning, you will be sorry that you were not there to experience this. And it bridges all ages. It will be incredible. And we won't reveal it because if it's not a surprise, it doesn't work. So be there.
Good. So it's Lady Gaga and Bruce Springsteen?
Lady Gaga's in town.
Volt Dancer wants to know, will the Volt Dancers be performing? I can't wait, he says.
They were in L.A., weren't they?
Yes, they were in L.A. and all over the Internet.
Yeah.
Let's see here. We probably got time for just about one more, and we've got more questions here than I can possibly get to. Let's see here. One for specifically...
It's good to see so many people interested in the show.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Dragonfire. Maybe you can. You got a Mitsubishi store, right?
Yes.
Yeah. He says, why doesn't Mitsubishi buy Saab and just add the lineup as their own? They really need a new Galant, and the 9.5 would fit that well.
Great idea.
You know what? That is a great idea, because what I've been saying to Mitsubishi management is you need to develop yourself into a boutique brand, a Japanese Porsche, if you will. You got the Evo, which is an incredible vehicle, the Spyder. Saab is what I would call a cult or a boutique brand. It would be a great marriage. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great idea.
Dragonfire, go patent that idea or protect yourself somehow. You just came up with a good one. You heard it right here from Doug Fox.
Price has got to be right, too.
That's true.
Right. Well, we're at the top of the hour, so we really should wrap this whole thing up. Also, remember, you can always follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Autoline Detroit. You can get all our updates and everything that's going on. Follow us at Twitter at... Twitter.com/Autoline. You can always follow Peter at AutoExtremist.com. In fact, you should always do that. Steve, they can always go to WardsAuto.com, but is there for dealer business or anything?
Yeah, just click on Ward's Dealer Business at the top banner to the right.
At WardsAuto.com.
Yeah, that part's free, by the way.
Okay, and Doug, you got any websites or anything?
Well, you can follow me at AnnArborAutomotive.com.
There you go.
And certainly feel free to buy something from
Doug.
That's
exactly right, Peter. Thank you. And you can also obviously follow NAIAS.com and CharityPreview.com for the Charity Preview.
Fantastic. And, of course, we got to thank our friends at Dow at DowBetaMate.com for helping sponsor this show. We very much appreciate that. And great having you guys here.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Jim. Great being here.
Thanks again to Dow Automotive Systems for their support of Autoline After Hours. Visit www.dowbetamate.com to learn more about how Betamate is reducing vehicle weight and enhancing durability. That's dowbetamate.com. Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there, and much more at AutolineDetroit.tv.